Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 294, my interview with international improv leader, Michelle Gilliam. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You know, you've been doing a lot of shopping for a lot of other people in your life, and you need to take some time for yourself. When you have Audible, you have access to hundreds of books and podcasts online, all sorts of things that are included in your membership. And then every single month, you get a credit that you can use to buy a new book so that as you're paying for your subscription, you're getting so much for that money. You really need to take some time for yourself because you're doing a great job taking care of everybody else, but now it's time to take care of you. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your account today. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by podcastcadet.com. Podcastcadet.com is one of the companies that my husband Chris and I run, and this company is to help podcasters. At the beginning of the new year, every new year, we all try to be a little more exciting. We all try to do something that we've been hoping that we could do. And if you want to start a podcast, connect with us. And if we can help you, we absolutely will. There's lots of free resources on podcastcadet.com, but in the off chance that you need a service from us, like editing or anything like that, or you want a workshop to figure out how to work on script writing for your podcast about the haunted house that you always wanted to live in, call us. Mention code YBY and you get 20% off this first service or workshop that you buy. Let us help you. Podcastcadet.com. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by True Hemp Science. True Hemp Science is our resource for vegan-friendly whole plant extract CBD oil. Once again, you really do need to focus on taking care of yourself. I bet you wrapping all those gifts has really messed with your hands. Be like me. Get some of this CBD hand lotion. Something about it just helps me out, and I really appreciate it. My husband likes the tinctures. They also have this CBD bud, so if you like smoking, you can do that. And it's not THC get you crazy time. It's just CBD chill out. Enjoy. Just relax. TrueHempScience.com has so many CBD products available to you. Check it out. And if you want to purchase something, please do. Use code YESBUTY7 and you get 7% off your order of $50 or more. And included, you will get a free packet of edibles with your order. CBD edibles, that is. TrueHempScience.com. This week on Yes But Why, I had the opportunity to chat with Michelle Gilliam. Michelle is the owner and artistic director of Improv MKE, an improv school and theater she started in 2020 and built up via online classes. In our conversation, Michelle talks to me about the community she is building with Improv MKE and how much she cares for all the artists she has connected with. She is smart and determined, confident and spectacular. Tune in for a great talk. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 294, Michelle Gilliam on thriving as an artist and pushing on to the next big thing. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah.
So my mom, I feel like, was a huge part of this. My mom was very creative just an extremely creative person. And so my brother and I are 13 months apart. My sister's 10 years older than I am. But so we were very little at the same time. And she would play this game that I remember that I absolutely loved called opera. So my mom was a singer by trade, and she would she would basically be cleaning up the house and have us follow her around, and we would we would sing an opera together. Just one that we made up on the spot. So that's, to me, one of my earliest like improv memories. I always tell people I started when I was 15, but I really probably started when I was like two. Just based on my mom's creativity, and essentially she wanted to be able to keep track of us while she was cleaning the house, so we weren't screwing something else up. So as long as she could hear our voices and we were following her and we were part of the opera, then we were good. And my brother, like, I wanted to do everything my brother did. My brother always wanted to build robots. So his version of building robots was just taking every single one of our toys and stacking it in the shape of a robot on top of each other and getting them to balance. So that was also really fun. There's a lot that we did. And then as I got older, I have a lot of cousins on my mom's side. I have 28 first cousins on my maternal side. Whoa. And I have 3 on my dad's side. So very different. but I grew up around my mom's side of the family. And there are probably like 7 or 8 cousins that were like in my age range. And then, of course, my brother. And we played together a lot at my grandmother's house, or they'd come over to our house for sleepovers, or we'd go to theirs. And I remember making my cousins play this game that I called talk show host. So I was always the talk show host. Mm-hmm. And I would make up these ridiculously insane scenarios. And I would direct everyone at the same time. I'd say, okay, this is who you are. This is your character. Okay. So, you know, when I ask this question, this is how, you know, you want to respond. And sometimes I'd literally stop it in the middle and be like, okay, no, this is how you would react. You know, or just think about how it's affecting you. And I'm like 10. I was such a ridiculous human being from the time I was very small.
Oh, and even, gosh.
Yeah. And like, even before that, you know, I was obsessed with Sesame Street, and the whole reason I even wanted to become an actor was because I saw Savion Glover on Sesame Street. And I was like, oh, he's brown. I'm brown. He's on TV. I want to be on TV.
Yeah. And I just thought,
yeah. Yeah. So,
good old Sesame Street, man. Sesame yes. Street's been saving us for years. It's still, to this day, they do amazing things. Like, I'm watching current episodes, and, like, they just got great new characters, great new little, like, plot lines. Like, there's a little autistic puppet, and, like,
so cool.
The character has issues, you know, like, sensory issues, and they, like, talk about it. I'm like, guys, oh, my God, like, it's so amazing. The, like,
so
effort
smart.
They put into communicating hard stuff to kids. You know that all during the pandemic they were releasing regular videos to, like, kids about, like, what was going on? Like,
no.
Like, freaking God's work. Like, yeah. Seriously doing amazing work. And I am so glad that you saw this show and this is what inspired you. You know, when you said it, it felt very familiar to me too. I was like, maybe me too. My mom was definitely into PBS. My first impression that I ever did for people was Julia Child. So I feel like PBS was my fair as well.
That's so funny. I love that.
Now oh my
I
God.
Want to hear Julia Child.
Well, it's way impression. Better when I was 5. It was way better when I was 5. But now, you know, now at 43, it's just, you know, I've watched too many actual Julia Child. I just know what her voice sounds like. I'm like, oh, yes. But like when I was 5 and I was like, you break the egg. And they like laughed. Oh, God. And I would just stir and take in the laughter. Oh,
I love
man.
That.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's so great. I love that Sesame Street inspired you. And also, I'm doubly happy that you mentioned that as well, because like it is so important for little kids to see representations of themselves on TV. And I'm so glad you saw that, because like, heck yeah, you're doing it and you're in it and you're like a major part of the theater world right now. And that's so awesome. I bet you that actor would be so happy to know that he inspired that.
Yeah.
So great. Awesome. What about, tell me more about this talk show host. Did you do other directing stuff when you were younger? Did you, like, when you got a little bit older, did your brother and you create plays or whatnot? Or was he not so into performing after he realized that improvised opera was just about mom's cleaning?
No, my brother was an athlete, and incredible athlete. Like, literally, we thought he was going to be a professional baseball player. And I remember when he wasn't picked up, like, my family had, like, a collective existential crisis. Like, what is happening in the world? Because it was his baseball career was such a big part of my childhood as well. Just traveling all over the country, going to different camps, him winning awards from all over the place, and being seen by, different scouts and coaches and things. When he wasn't a pro baseball player, we were like, wait, what? Because he was very good and very talented. And sometimes it just like acting, right? It doesn't matter how good and talented you are. Sometimes it's just not you and it's not your time. And there's no necessary right or wrong answer. But no, so we didn't write plays together. He was creative in the field of baseball and other sports. And I kind of went on to acting, just like, you know, normal acting, until I discovered improv when I was 15. And I was like, oh, I don't have to learn lines. I don't have to do this traditionally. I'm in. I'm all in. I was bossy, if you want to say, like, did I direct things? And I didn't. And here's the fun part. I didn't know I was bossy. My cousin told me, my cousin Africa told me I was bossy when I was 17. And I just took such great offense to it. I thought it was, like, the worst thing in the world. And then I realized that it just meant that I'm a leader, and and that I didn't need to be offended by it. But she did mean it as an offense. She sure. measured it at that time. And I definitely took it that way. But then it probably took me like a year or two to realize, like, it's not a bad thing at all. You know, it's gotten me to where I'm at, you know, and it usually attracts really great people, either people who listen to me or people who are also incredible leaders, which is who most of my friends are. And the people that I'm closest to just have really big, strong ideas, and we get things done. So, yeah.
I like that. We get things done. That's a very important part of this whole scenario.
Yeah.
There are, you and I know hundreds of people, I'm sure, who are sitting in their homes just, you know, throwing stuff against the wall and still going, I don't understand why I'm not getting anything. And they're like, okay, cool. But have you told anyone about the things you're throwing against the wall? Like, yeah. Did you get that website I told you to get? No? Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know what to tell you. Also, I love the idea that you surround yourself with other leaders as well. I find that that's probably the best way to go, because I think that sometimes when people notice their own leadership qualities, whether because someone told them they were bossy or because some other person frames it, oh, you're an excellent leader. And you're like, oh, yes, I am amazing. You're right. A lot of times they'll be like, great, so the people I'm looking for to hang out with now are followers. I need to find people. But I think it's smart and really amazing to surround yourself with other go-getting people. People are going to get their work done, so you can instead be like, okay, let's all come up with 10 projects, and then the 10 of us will take one each, and then we'll go do it, and then we'll come back and be like, we're the best. Like, yeah. There's something great about that. Way better, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just always confident that I attract the right people to my life. And so, and usually that those people are incredible leaders that really make a difference in the world.
That's great. What a wonderful like sentiment to, that you feel like you attract good people to your life. I'm so glad. Yeah. That is a wonderful thing both to believe and to like actually feel like has happened in your life. Like that's awesome.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to ask you about, you mentioned your brother's, you know, career change, surprise career change, and how that threw you all for a loop. But the interesting, like, lesson that feels like happened during the time when you were traveling and watching things go up and down for him was sort of the actor lesson. Like, okay, what's going on with him is definitely what something I would have to deal with as an actor. Do you think that... Well, as well as improv being awesome, but do you think that motivated you when you found improv and they were like, hey, we have this cool art. It's like way more fun. And also like there's a lot less competition. And, you know, really the rejection is sort of low on our thing. Did that make you want to head in that direction because you had seen your brother go through rough stuff during that point?
No, it's kind of funny you say that. I'm so glad that's been your experience with improv. That has not been my experience.
Oh, no.
Like I started off in comedy sports, which is, you know, even though it's supposed to not be competitive, it's so competitive. And then I was the captain of my high school league team for comedy sports. And so I was one of the only Black women. I'm the only Black woman that like lasted or Black teenager. There were two other girls who from two different high schools that were also a part of it, and I'm still friends with them to this day. One of them is a teacher, Kristen. She's great. But anyway, but she only played like one season. And but so I was one of, I think, two public high schools that did it. And then I'm Black, and then I'm a girl, right? So there were a lot of things that, like, for the world that we exist in, where that's called improv, where people, you know, automatically assume that you're not funny, and then they see you, and they're like, what? Like, what's happening? This is funny. And I'm also someone who doesn't play into, I grew up in Wisconsin, and you're talking about you grew up in Boston, and very racist places. Mine's a little bit more passive sometimes, but it's very much there. Whereas that's one of the things I liked about Boston. It was very in your face. I lived there for a couple of years.
Sure, they like that. Yeah.
And, you know, but in my town, it's like they pretend like it's not happening and it's definitely happening. It's like being gaslit by your own state. So I was dealing with that as well. And I was very aware of the things that I was dealing with. And it was oddly competitive. And then, you know, there was like a disrespect because I was at a public school, even though it's literally to this day, one of the best schools in the nation. And then just having like the thought process of people thinking that you're not funny just because you're Black, whether it's the audience or, and you're a girl, whether it's the audience or fellow players that, don't know you very well. So, did that prepare me, my brother? No, I didn't really compare the experiences. It was, I know I said that about acting. I was meant that like as a general thing, but like, no, at the time, and even now, I don't like really compare the experiences because I look at like, and I know most people don't. We talked about this a little bit beforehand, but like I look at improv as a lot of people look at it as a skill to help them do other things. I look at improv as improv. Improv is the destination for me. Mm-hmm. I've gotten the opportunity to do other really neat things because of it, but I'm not trying to do all those other things and just like grab improv skills because of it. I love improv so much. And if I could do that, and that paid all the bills all the time, I would do it. And I do feel lucky. It is paying some of the bills right now. And I feel very fortunate and just I'm over the moon about that. But yeah, it's the destination for me. It's not like, I would love to do, you know, more acting and like on television and in movies. But if I just get to do improv for the rest of my life, I'm okay with that too.
Now, I love that you love improv so much. I also agree that improv is the destination. Like, yeah, I like doing other stuff, but they're totally different. Like, acting is a totally different animal for me. And most of the acting that I'm doing is like short films and commercials anyway, which is a whole different animal. And then, yeah, I've never been able to do, like, when, like, in Second City where they do improv to sketch, I have such a hard time with that. Like, I'm like, why am I writing this down? This is it. This is it. We're done yeah. now. Like, when this scene is over, it's gone. Like, I'm not going to spend time thinking about it, right? And, like, I appreciate the idea of, like, doing it in, like, a writing class. You know what I mean? Like, you wrote something and then you get somebody to act it out and you're like, okay, try this. Sure, from an editing perspective, I could see. But I've definitely seen people try to create shows where, like, they watch an improv show and then they, like, finish the show and they come together and they're like, okay, that one you guys did in the hospital, yeah, let's write that into a sketch. And I'm like, all right. I don't, it just doesn't, like, yeah, for me, it feels like that's a complete thought. We're not doing this again. Right. Yeah. I don't know. And for me, sketch, I'm like, I got enough ideas. I don't need to improv them. You want some ideas? I got some. What? Here's 1,000 funny ideas. Let's write those instead. But yeah, they're totally different animals in my mind as well. No, so the reason why I wanted to ask you, so you love it. I'm super down also loving it as the end destination. However, the beginning of your story and the beginning of the improv experience seems to have been quite toxic. I have definitely experienced the you're a lady, so you're not funny. I can't imagine the extra added addition of being a black female and getting disrespected for that. And then you mentioned that they give you a hard time for being from public school too. Man, girl can't catch a break. So, like, you had such a sort of negative experience with that.
It wasn't, though. It wasn't negative. That's the thing, is, like, I don't look at it that way. I look at it kind of fact-based on our society and the way things are seen. Like, I'm not going to pretend like something's not happening. Right. To me, that's also what makes a good improv scene, right? It's like, if you continuously step over things and pretend like they're not happening, that is a denial of the reality. And so why would I deny the reality? Like, it's a part of it, you know? And you play with it and you play through it. Like, for example, before like, I started high school in 96, and I think UCP started in, like, 98, something like that. I don't know the exact date, but before top of intelligence was a phrase or a thing, I was teaching that to the 14 and 15 year olds that I was playing with on my team, right? Because being the only black person, for the most part, I think there were, like, a total of 4 of us, but again, I was the only one that stayed the whole time, but people would yell out, they'd see me on stage, they'd be like, wow, I really like that person, at least this is how I framed it in my head. But then, being racist Wisconsin, they would throw out, like, every black celebrity, you know, that they could think of. And so I would tell my team, I'm like, look, every time they're calling out a black celebrity, I'm not going to go out and do it, because they basically want me to see me do a stereotype, and they want it to be obvious, oh, this person is black because the black person's playing it. So I was both teaching my mostly all white male team that they had to go out there and play these roles for these characters to the top of their intelligence, and that, you know, I wasn't going to play a stereotype of what people think that I am or should do or should play. So, you know, it was a teachable moment, not only for my teammates that I, you know, directed and taught how to play and all the games and everything, but it was also for the audience, right? It's like, we don't have to go to these places that we think are typical in order for things to be funny, or make fun of the things that, you know, a person can't change about themselves in order for it to be funny. If that makes any sense. Oh, so yeah. It was a great experience, and it still continues to be. I'm an observer. I think that's what also makes you a good actor or improviser, is, like, observing the things around you. And for me, I've always played the human aspect, whether I'm acting or improvising. And I think that that's what connects to the audience the most personally.
Yeah. Yeah. You have such a strong confidence, and I love this idea that you're teaching this group and that you're so on point with them about, like, top of your intelligence and, like, you know, hey, they're trying to box us into these stereotypes and the low-hanging fruit of comedy, but that's not the kind of comedy we're going to do. That's so smart, and you were so adult, like, as a child. Have you always been so put together? I mean, you're just like, hey guys, I'm 15. Let me tell you how we're gonna be the smartest, most intelligent improv troupe. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. I was not that smart at 15.
That's so funny. I don't think of it as put together. I think of it as a combination of me having what I call common sense or good sense and good parenting. My parents, you know, always taught us to be confident in who we are. You know, we grew up in a predominantly white area, and then we moved to the city proper, which was interesting. That was kind of like culture shock for us. But we were able to not just survive, but like thrive in every environment because we were so solid in who we are as people. And that's all my parents doing. You know, they taught us, like, we weren't allowed to watch television that portrayed Black people in a negative light or in a stereotypical light. Like, I wasn't allowed to watch, and I still have it to this day, what is it called? Like the Little Rascals. And I get, like, people think that those things are funny. And, but, you know, my parents wanted us to have a very confident view of who we are. And they explained it to us. They're like, you know, the media portrays us in a certain way, and there's things that we just don't want you to see because we don't want it to affect, you know, who you think you are or how people see you just because of the color of your skin. And so, you know, we had choice as we got older, but it was very clear that they protected us from certain things. To make sure that we did have that confidence and self-love and taught us about who we are as Africans in America, and that our history did not begin at slavery. Yeah, so.
Wow. What great parents. Yeah. They're really, really handling it on all angles. That's so great. Yeah,
they still are. They're incredible.
Yeah, nailing, doing so good. Man, that's amazing. It makes me, as from the point of view of being a parent too, I'm like, there's a point when your kids are young and you're like, how early do I start talking to them about rough stuff? But it's really important. I mean, I remember my mom did that too. Like I mentioned, I'm from Boston. It's a racist place. She would literally explain to us that we might hear people saying things and that they were wrong. And she's like, I know that you want to believe what adults tell you, but let me tell you, there are adults that are incorrect. And let me tell you what they're going to say.
That's a good mom.
Yeah. Well, her parents, I realized as upon reflection, as I got older, because like I told my friends, like I was like, didn't your mom bring you around to different people's houses that were different from you and go like, here's a family that's different from us, but still the same, like meet them. They live in this part of town and, you know, they're Jewish and you need to understand them. And I was like, oh, okay. Hey, what's up? How's it going? And we met different people from different cultures because she was like, you're not going to see this. The town that I'm from is like super white. So we didn't meet anybody, but she was in Boston teaching. So she brought us around and introduced us to all sorts of different people from different cultures because she was like, these are people that I work with and their families. Like, meet this teacher, you know, and meet these different people. You need to understand that the world is a diverse place and you do not disrespect them. And I was like, okay, great. And as a child, I just remember being like, yes, mom, you're great. I'm going to do what you say. But then when I got older, I was like, whoa, everybody's parents doesn't do that? Oh, okay. I really just thought that was part of, you know, I thought every year going to the Hanukkah party, even though we were raised Catholic, was part of it. I just thought, like, yeah, that's what you do. You just go hang with your friends and see what they do. And you're like, tell me about Hanukkah. Okay. You know, stuff like that. Like, yeah, it's so on point, like for myself thinking about parenting and like any parents that might be listening, like it is important to talk to people about the reality of the world and like let them see diversity and meet people. And, you know, what was it? I just found in the library a little book for my 4-year-old called About Our Skin. And it's like a whole thing like explaining racism. And I was like, this is great. And he loves it too. He's like, okay. We've decided, by the way, that our skin color is called peachy. That's what we decided instead. Neat. He goes, Mama, this isn't actually white, though. I go, you make a strong point. That's right. It isn't. It isn't. I said, let's find a crayon that what matches. And then he was there like, peach. Go. Peach is good. And I was like, great. We're peachy. Let's do it.
Yeah. It does backfire sometimes, though, because I remember being in middle school and having an argument with a good friend of mine because she told me that her dad did not live in her house. And I was like, dads live in houses with their kids. What are you talking about? Like, I argued with her about her own life because that's how dumb I was as well. I was very smart, but also very dumb about certain things. My parents are celebrating 50 years of marriage in January, and my grandparents were married for 70 years until my grandfather passed. But
70 years?
Yeah. So that was all I knew for both sides of my my grandparents and then my parents. And so it does backfire sometimes.
No, you know what it is? It's not backfiring. It's just that it's very hard to see outside of your own life experience. Mm-hmm. That literally is the issue, is that like people have a very hard time. Everyone, not just some people, everyone has a hard time seeing outside the direct experience that they have, right? Which I think is why my mom brought us around. Like, she didn't just say, hey, by the way, there's a teacher that I work with, you know, and she's black, and she has a, you know, her kids are black, and they live in Dorchester, and we're going to go have dinner with them. Like, it wasn't like, let me just tell you about them. It was like, let's meet people and see, and you know, go have dinner at each other's houses and be like, you don't have to judge people. Look, we do the exact same job, and we were exactly, you know, their well, kids are the same age.
Judge them in a better way. Or, you know, judge them in a better way, right?
Yeah, yeah. Judge them as equals, I suppose.
Yeah,
absolutely. But yeah, it's hard to understand if you're... Yeah, my parents stayed married too until my dad passed away. Like, they're not... You know, and I didn't... Until I had friends in college and I was like... Oh, your parents are divorced. I don't understand what that is. But, you know, it's just life experience. You just got to move through it. Like even hearing two things about your life experience. Number one, I'm not black, so I don't understand the troubles that you encountered with the improv suggestions, though I can't imagine it was fun, though you have a very positive attitude about it. And also, I started with long form, so short form for me is different, too. I'm like, oh, right, short form is competitive. I forget that part. I did long form, which is
competitive as well.
Some people's long form, yes, but the school that I was in, the like main push was just about taking care of each other and having each other's back and making sure everybody looked good. And it was never we had a lot of like cage match shows, but it was always clear that there was no real competition. Like, it was like, that's no, great. You guys are just doing a cage match because this is how we sell tickets to the people who want to come in and watch. You, whoever wins, you're both awesome. Like, it does not matter what's going on with that. So, yeah, I mean, so I get the competitiveness of short form. Did you continue with short form as you
Until I went to college. So I'm glad I had a base in short form. And then I went to college in Chicago and I met long form and I was like, oh, I didn't know I could fall in love anymore. And I did. and I was in Boston. I shared with you for a couple of years as well. And that's where I saw where the main like competitive nature, because in college I was on my college team and then I'd go down to IO every Saturday at midnight to do the jam, and the jam was mainly short form, and I didn't take like classes at any of the schools. My dad begged me to do Second City, but I just didn't, and And I'm okay with that.
I love that your dad begged you. Like, I love this idea that your dad's like, you've got to do Second City. It's the place.
Yeah, truly. But when I was in Boston, it was interesting because they'd have auditions twice a year. And there were a minimum of 500 people that would come through those doors to audition for maybe 20 spots, and 20 is being generous. And so when I say competition, like, it was competitive. Now, what I loved about Boston as well, I mean, there's so many things I loved about Boston, but there was a strong indie scene. So, I mean, there wasn't a discouragement of going and creating your own space and having other teams come and play, or putting up mashup teams, or having a consistent space where you did a show every week, you know, with your indie team. Whereas other places, especially in my hometown, that was discouraged. Hmm. Like, Comedy Sports kind of started here, and with Dick Chudnow, and, you know, I'm sure he didn't mean for it to happen this way, but there's a certain pride that comes with being a part of that organization and playing on the main stage, so to speak. And like, if you wavered from that in any way, you were kind of outcast. That didn't really happen, you know, to me, but I watched it happen to a lot of people who tried to start their own thing. And like I said, I don't think Dick had anything to do with it, but it was a monster that continued to grow. And I don't think that he knew how to reel it back in, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's the kind of scene that I was used to. And a couple of things got off the ground only recently. And that's almost been 40 years into the comedy sports history here in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So it's just really been fascinating.
Yeah, it is interesting. Since you mention it, it reminds me of my situation when I first started as well. The guy, so I mentioned that the theater that I took classes at and started with crumbled in disgrace. Audience, you know the story. But during, and I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that the head of the theater was very much against indie situations. He wanted to control, you know, who got what on stage and
that's
who
typical.
Were the people. And myself and a significant portion of the community were like, that's not, we can do whatever we want. Like, you don't own improv. Like, you also don't pay us. So, like, you don't own us in any way. Like, you can't tell us where to perform or how to do stuff. Now, did he definitely tell people, like, oh, if you want to be an actor on the main stage show that's every Saturday night, you can't be doing shows at other theaters? Yeah, he did. But after the theater crumbled, that was definitely like the first rule that got burned in the trash. Like, everybody, when after the theater, after my theater broke down, it was called the New Movement. It's terrible. But after that broke down, the whole community, because there's five or six improv theaters in Austin, everybody kind of got together and was like, okay, we can't let this happen again. We need to be a unified community, and we need to be on top of, number one, making sure our community members are feeling cared for and that given lots of opportunities, but also like encourage the freedom of creating your own thing. Like, there's plenty of stages. There's plenty of space for you to go. Austin's nice weather most of the time. So it's like, even if you can't find a stage, here's a park. Please enjoy. Like, you can literally do stuff outside here a lot of the year. So it's like, please do whatever you want. Rooms and libraries are free. Like, you can go and have rehearsals with thousands of troops if that's what you want, and create whatever you wanted. But, and I feel like there was some of an indie scene here outside of the theaters, but after the New Movement shut down, the town was just so tired of having this controlling person who, and even though he was only in charge of one theater, every other theater kind of felt his weird wrath. And they were like, no, let's decide not to do this. Like, all the theater leaders got together and wrote like a a series of rules about like taking care of people and making sure there was equity and stuff like that, so that everyone in the whole town was on board. Yeah. And it would filter down and it'd be like, okay, guys, we and all the rest of the theaters are going to try to make sure this. But I mean, this is only maybe 4 years ago. You know what I mean? Right. Like, it was very controlling for a while. I remember when indie teams came in, you know, people were like, what are they doing? What, I don't understand. Are you trying to be competition with us? So I get the idea of that. I personally thought competition was like the antithesis of improv. So I just sort of, and also I'm naive. Like, I just think everyone's pleasant and wants to have a good time. And there's no, like, for real. I know you're trying to be sweet and be like, no, you're not naive. No,
no, I'm not. I'm not trying to be sweet. No, because that's the way my brain works too. And my body and everything that every sensory that I have about it. And then I have to remember when I see behavior that is inconsistent with what I know, feel and believe, and I'm like, oh, that exists. So I don't think it's naivete. Well, in a sense it is, but it's like, it's so far out of your thought process, belief system, and who you are as a human being that you forget. And I do that too. And then I'm like, oh, okay, it's there. All right, cool. It's not for me. It's not my thing, but it's there. And that's why this person is acting this way. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I don't even recognize it or understand what's happening until I see like these strange behaviors. And I'm like, that's not consistent with what I feel like is happening. And I'm like, oh, they're competing with me or the world or whatever they've created in their mind, whatever world, you know, I don't exist in that world, but for them, I do.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah.
No, totally. I also feel like improv is the lack of control, and it's sort of like enjoying that. And I feel like a lot over the past few years, not just my theater, but many theaters across at least the US have crumbled due to over controlling leaders, people who have been trying to force people to do certain things and like, you will do it my way. And I'm like, I'm really sorry, but that's just not how it works. Like, you have to let it ebb and flow, and you have to trust that if the people who you think are the best leave to do something else, you are not lost forever. There is a new crop. And I said this for years to the people that were running theaters. They'd come and be like, oh my God, there's no new actors out there. And I'm like, they're there. They just don't know to take classes yet. You just need to do a new round of, you know, Groupons or like emails or blasts on Facebook to be like, did you know that there are cool classes where you could meet cool people? Like, you know, there's always new people. I would stand there at the theater and try to convince everyone that came to see a show to take a class. Like, I'd be like, hi, oh, thanks for buying that ticket. So were you going to be on stage soon? And they're like, oh, no, I'm just here to see a show. And I was like, well, you let me know, all right, because you could be great. And then, you know, and then the whole audience for a show joins the next improv and they're like, oh my God, there are new actors. And I was like, everyone wants to do improv. They just don't know it yet.
I believe that as well.
So
some people are waiting for that encouragement and that
absolutely.
I'm glad you do that too.
I feel a similar vibe with you and I appreciate that. So tell me about your space. So now jumping forward quite a bit, I'm sure, but like for you, what was the motivation to start your own improv, maybe not theater, but sort of community?
I've wanted to for a while. I lived in Madison maybe almost 10 years ago now. And so Madison, Wisconsin, and I was getting kind of bored. And I hadn't done improv in a while, and I was like, and there wasn't a major scene, in Madison. And I was like, I want to teach, I want to play. So I had this idea to start my own theater, and then my company moved me to Boston like immediately. So that kind of went, to the wayside for a little bit. And then I came home from Boston and I got involved with a theater. And then they started kind of being terrible, And I was like, oh, I can't really support this terribleness. And they kind of crumbled after a Facebook post that I put up in 2020. And it really sucks because it didn't have to happen that way. You know, they could have just like been decent human beings like I thought they were, but they chose other paths, which is also fine.
Do have similar situations then. Gosh.
Yeah. Well, our story is not uncommon. Yeah. That's what it is. Ugh. And people, you know, sometimes we delude ourselves and try to say like, oh, you know, it's a great community. And it's like, no, there's flaws. There's flaws. And it's okay to look at them and do something about them instead of pretending like they're not there or denying the reality. Right. So I wanted to begin to create a community where I felt safe and where I felt like other people could feel safe. And they're safe in so many aspects, right? But we also deal with just regular challenges in improv that have nothing to do with how we identify as humans. Like, it's just like, there's just insecurities and confidence and just other things. And it's like, I want people to just feel comfortable being able to express themselves overall. Right. So those are some things that are really important to me: safety, bravery, and community. Right. In 2020, I went ahead and started Improv MKE, and no one knew or knows usually what MKE stands for. It stood for Milwaukee. Now I don't know what it stands for because I am moving to LA, and it's all online right now. So that's totally fine and it works. I do some in-person things right now. We don't have a physical space. I had a physical space before the pandemic, but nobody knew about it because I hadn't announced that I was starting my own theater yet. And then the shutdown happened like a week after that. And I was like, ooh, this is insane. And I didn't, no one knew how long it was going to last or what was going to happen. But luckily I didn't lose any money on that. And it has thrived in the pandemic. The community. So we've done 130 jams. I just recently took a break from that, and those will start again in mid-December. So as people listen to this, jams will be started up again. We teach classes, mainly me right now, but we also have something called the Drip-In, which is, and we've taken a break from that as well, just because I need breaks for things and I'm making a move across the country. But that's a drop-in that's taught by a Black instructor. We do the Yes And practice on Tuesday mornings or Tuesday evenings if you're in the UK or somewhere else in the world, which is just, you know, getting reps in. And those are usually taught by my friend Jess O'Neill, or myself, or another instructor, sometimes Becky Webb, who's in Liverpool as well. I just wanted a space where I felt comfortable existing. And it's also constantly changing, right? It's like, what are the things that are good about communities that I want to incorporate here? And so I'm just constantly and consistently thinking about those things and how I want things to go or be, or what the community wants as well.
Wow. Man, what a wild situation that you had it ready to go right before the pandemic. And then I'm so glad that you did not lose money on that space.
Yeah, me too.
Like, oh, thank you, whomever was like, no, you don't have to. We can just end this lease that hasn't quite started yet. Oh, that's so nice. Yeah. About half the improv theaters here in town lost their space. Two did not. And I was all like, you guys are great. You're doing it. And also like wanted to send like some flowers to the owners of the building. But at the same time, like, man, that was some of the hardest parts for new theaters is to lose spaces. And then like that revenue just like kicks you over.
Yeah.
Now, during the pandemic, you, like I, seems to have connected with the larger international improv community. And I don't know about you, but I found that the circles that I'm in, like, are the people who want to create these open, kind communities, right? There are people, there are improvisers all over the world, for sure. But for some reason, the ones that I am, that are in my circles right now, are the ones who are banging that same drum of like, hey, guys, we need to make sure we have an equitable space. Hey, let's create safe spaces for people. Let's make sure that they're good. And, you know, thankfully, since you're company has been, you know, booming online. Have you been all those people that you mentioned that were, are teaching with you? Did you know them beforehand, or did you like meet them during the pandemic and connect over like shared ideas on what improv should be? And now they're teaching with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So Kat Grimm as well is from the Boston community, and she started to come to my jams online, and I didn't know Kat when I was in Boston. Like, we literally just missed each other by a couple of months with me moving back to Wisconsin, and I'd seen her name, and I guess she'd seen mine, and she started coming to my jams, and it was absolutely incredible. We're friends now. She's actually been here to Milwaukee. I did a couple of in-person events in August, and she flew here and has been absolutely incredible and become a friend. You know, yeah, Becky Webb, no, I didn't know her before the pandemic. And Al Donahoe, who just started, I think it's called Atomic Improv in Liverpool. They both live in Liverpool. They met at an Improv MKE jam. You know, I thought that was one of the coolest things. Siddharth, who's from Bangalore, or Improv Comedy Bangalore, he has been absolutely incredible, and I think he was my first international person that came to a jam, and I was I've told him since, but I was like jumping out of my skin because I was so excited that he was there. I was like, oh my gosh, there's a person from India who does improv in my jam. I am losing my mind right now. And the reason I met Becky is because Emma Bird came, and she owns Liverpool Comedy Improv. And she came to my jam and brought the Boss Birds, who are, you know, some of her players. And Becky and Jess, I think, were Boss Birds, and they came and they never left. And they've now become good friends, and they're just absolutely amazing. I've met just a lot of incredible people through other people. I met Jay Succo through my friend Will Hines, and I've worked with Jay on some incredible projects. And you just also get to work with people internationally, but also nationally, that you normally would not really get the opportunity to work with. And it's made a huge difference for me, and I know for everyone else. Talia Papp, who's in Copenhagen, love her, get to work with her on different projects. So many people, I know I'm going to forget to mention a lot of people, but it's just been absolutely incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. Insert names of all the other people that Michelle loves so much.
Yes.
All over the world.
Seriously. I love so many people.
Oh, man. What a great experience. I mean, 130 jams. I'm sure you've met your fair share of people and more. Yeah. So, yeah. Wow. That's so great. I feel like, you know, a lot of people are down on online improv, but the human connections that I've been able to make across the world through this kind of stuff it's immeasurable. Like, you're right. Yeah. Siddharth, wonderful. Like, how great is it to be able to chat? I first connected with him when he was like, hey, I like clicked that I was interested on some jam that they had done. And he was like, send me a private message. Hey, I noticed that you were interested, but you didn't say you were coming. We'd love to have you be part of this jam. And I was like, oh, he's sending me a private message trying to get me involved. Like, that extra little bit of work that he did. And I was like, okay, we're together forever. Like, let's let's do this. Yeah. And I joined them on this one jam, and I walked in and they were like, by the way, it's musical improv. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, I'm ready. Let's do this. So at 6 in the morning too. I was like, I'm going to get up early. Don't wake the boy. And I shut the door to the office and lock it. And now I'm in here singing. And they're like, what is she doing in that office so early in the morning? Oh man, it was so fun. Yeah, it's great. I love the connecting with different people. I just think that there's just such good people that have made their way to the online improv world, like the people that like you who have put so much effort during this time that was so rough that like you could have just been like, I will lay here now and do nothing. Like you could have, and you didn't. You like went out there and connected with people and like tried to make as much of a community as you could from all of our homes. Like that's so admirable that you would, you know, work together with everybody and try to build something. What are your hopes and dreams for it as you go to LA? Like the move to LA, what does that mean for your company? How is that going to grow what your efforts are?
Yeah, I mean, my goal is still continue to do online events so that people can access me and others from around the world very easily and take classes and have fun and connect. As well as still do in-person events. I have a team here that we do private shows right now. So I'd like to still, you know, continue to have them do private shows. And every once in a while, maybe for some of the bigger events, I'll come in, but also do that in LA and all over the world, really. I'm doing a tour that in the UK in March of next year that David Escobedo is setting up for myself and Vanessa Anton. And I'm so excited. Yeah. And I've got friends. Like I have a good friend, Dawn Stevens, who's in Iowa, who I kind of randomly met because a Comedy Sports show was sold out, but I'd rented out the theater, another theater in Comedy Sports, and did a show. And she came up to me after the show and she's like, I live in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and I do improv too. Can we connect on Facebook? And we've become friends, and she's, and her husband, Greg, are coming over to that UK tour. so I have some American friends that are coming across the pond to come take workshops with me as well. And so just to continue to, I don't know what it looks like. I just want to continue to feel good, have fun, and meet people. And, you know, that's pretty much it. That's my plan.
Oh, wow.
Did teach you workshops ever... everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. Did you ever imagine that, you know, it would expand and become such a vibrant community? You know, I feel like you probably got a gut punch right when 2020 hit and they were like, okay, sorry, you wanted to start this, but it didn't work out. Like, how does it feel to you right now? I feel like you should be so proud of yourself.
Well, that's the thing. I didn't get a gut punch. I got a gut punch in a different way, I guess. So it's so funny. It's like, I think that if someone just like hears me talk, they probably think I'm a little negative, but I'm not. I'm actually extremely positive.
No, you're so positive. You're so, everything I say, I'm negative. And you're like, no, I don't look at it that way. You're right. Everyone was deeply racist to me at all times. Let me tell you how I turned that around and how I'm actually a wonderful person because of it. I'm like, Michelle, you're just like every corner. I'm like, so it must have been hard. You're like, no, it's not hard. Let me tell you how I'm thriving. I'm like, yes. No, you're inspiring me. I'm like, I gotta soak up some of this confidence as we're talking. No, absolutely. I was literally writing, she is thriving and confident and positive as you said that. It's what I'm writing on my notebook right now.
Thank you. So what happened was my concern turned not for myself, but for my community immediately. And so even before we started the jams at Improv MKE and I started doing events and classes, I had a daily, I bought a Zoom account immediately, and I had a nightly meeting at 8 p.m. Central Time where I invited everyone in my improv community to come and just hang out. You know, I didn't set an end time to it. And I was just really concerned because I know that we're all artists and sometimes we get deeply into our feelings, and I didn't want to, I literally thought about, you know, I didn't want to lose anybody in our community, you know, because they felt like they weren't connected to someone. And I knew a lot of people like were living alone. And so it wasn't like specifically improv focused or anything. It was like for, it was for my improv community, but it was also for, just anybody who needed to feel connection. So I did that nightly for about 4 months until, was it 4 months? Not quite that long. But until George Floyd, was murdered. Because then I didn't have the complete capacity to do it every single night anymore. But I did it for, you know, as many times as I could after that as well. But yeah, I just wanted to, you know, I wanted people to be connected, even though it wasn't like a formal thing. It was very informal. And yeah, so.
It is truly admirable, the sort of kind, open way in which you have, you know, made your way through, you know, the rocky road of improv. And now that you can truly take up the mantle of leader, with this group, you're, you know, sort of shepherding these sweet improvisers to a kind, happy place. And thankfully it's still all online. I think a lot of people are trying to get offline and get back in person, yeah. But I think it is super smart of you to maintain an online presence because there's still people who could use to connect. And like, you know, like I mentioned before, I got a 4-year-old. I'm not going out at night. I'm not going to night classes. Like I just can't, I don't have, you know, my husband travels for work. I don't have a babysitter to like, hey, can you swing over from like 8 to 10? No, I don't have that guy to like do that for me. So I love the online stuff because then I can, you know, put my kid to bed and be like, all right, see you later. And then come in here and I'm like, hey, what's up? Let's do this thing. Yeah, I've been taking a writing class the whole time online for like 3 or 4 months now. And it's like, it helps me so much to like have this creative outlet, but I don't have to leave my house. I can still be near my child, you know, and yet I can be there. It's, you know, it's great what you're doing, and I keep it online because I want to take a workshop with you now.
Oh yeah. Thank you. Also, I mean, I hope to establish something physical probably like, sure. But if I do, it'll be in LA because that's where I'll physically be most of the time. So yeah.
Yeah, LA is a rough spot for real estate, but you have a lot of excellent connections over there with good people who probably know where the good spots are for sure. I bet you Jay's got a line on a couple of awesome spots to do stuff. That would be great. So it's been really great to talk to you. I really appreciate you. I can't decide which of the questions I want to ask you as my outro. So I guess I'll probably just ask you both. So let's start with what advice would you give to people who want to do what you do, who want to, you know, create an improv community in their small town or who want to connect with improvisers across the world? What advice do you have for them to get them started?
Just do it. Go Nike.
Just do it. Just get out there and do it. There are people that want it. So yeah. If you're interested, if you're listening and you're like, I don't know if I should do it, just do it. Yeah. The landscape is pretty open, especially if you come with a kind heart. If your heart rivals the kindness of Michelle's, get out there. Right. Mm-hmm. If not, maybe stay home. You're fine. Just read a book and learn a little.
You're so funny. I mean, I just want people to cause less harm. I don't think like an improv, you know, scene has to start bad in order to get good. That was great English.
Yeah.
But that's often how it happens.
Yeah, so. No, it's true. It's true. The hard part, too, is whenever I teach my Improv 101 classes, I actually have to teach them to stop being polite to each other because in comedy, everyone's kind of terrible. I go, it's okay if your character is never going to understand what they say to them. That's his game. That's what he's going to do. You know, he's never going to be able to pick up that thing he can't pick up. that just don't never solve the problem. That's the hard part about comedy. Comedy's not really for solving problems. It's really more for making them worse, right? But yeah. Thankfully, there's all sorts of different kinds of improv, and improv can be used for all sorts of different things as well. Yes. So I guess then I would love to also know, what are you doing to creatively fill up your own cup? You're about to move to LA. You're about to move this community that you have. That seems like a huge undertaking. What are you doing to care for yourself creatively?
Oh, that's such a great question. That's what I'm doing. I mean, I turn 40 on November 19th, and this is what I'm doing for myself. Thank you. I'm moving to LA. I'm saying, hey, you know, do what makes you happy. Go to that great weather, Michelle. Go to that ocean. you know, be where things are happening and have them be more accessible. You know, I'm not afraid to get on a plane. I go to New York all the time. Literally, I went 3 times in 2019, and I've already been twice this year. I love New York so much, but ironically, I'm moving to LA. But that's what I'm doing. You
it's
know,
a similar I'm vibe.
Not at all. I'm doing things that make me feel good and things that make me happy. Mainly moving to LA right now, but also just thinking about the ways that I can do more with Improv MKE, you know, connecting with people or saying yes to things like this, and you know, teaching in different places around the country and around the world. That's what I'm doing to fulfill myself creatively, and I guess other things as well. Yeah.
Would you consider yourself an extrovert?
No.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I am. I'm not. I know it sounds strange.
No, the reason why I thought so and why I asked is because, you know, you saying that you're, you know, filling yourself up creatively with the move and the planning, that to me in my head makes me think of like, you know, you're getting energy from these other people. You're getting energy from the idea of moving forward and having this new adventure. And when I think of people who are, you know, filling up their energy with adventure, I think extrovert. When I think of a person who does adventure and it kind of depletes them a little bit, I think of introvert. So I just, that's the only reason why I asked. No pressure either way. Both are lovely and also equally great improvisers. I just wondered because you were like so pumped by the idea of moving. And I was like, man, most people don't like moving, but you were like psyched about moving. So like,
it just feels, it feels like the right thing for me. But it doesn't really involve other people. It actually is still very just me.
Yeah.
If I cared more about other people, I would probably, in the sense of like, I just sound so bad, but like, I would probably stay here. Right. It's like my scene feels like they need me because they want me to be their savior in some ways. And I'm just like, you know, that was my plan then. This is my plan now. I have to do what makes me feel good. And right now, it's not staying here and trying to convince people that we should all be united and be a community like Austin has done a great job of. I think that that will happen, but kind of like you and I talked about earlier, it's an awareness that I have when I realize the way that people react, but it's so not a part of me. Like I'm connected to all the communities that exist here in Milwaukee, but people see me as a certain way because I did call out some racist and things like that. But to me, that's not the end of the world. Like that theater did not have to close because I called out racism. They could have continued. We could have had a conversation. I could have, you know, we could have just been open and honest with each other, right? But for them, it's a really big deal. And they're like, oh, we can't move on. We simply cannot. I'm just like, yeah, that's not how it works.
No.
This is a part of our world on and off stage.
Yeah.
So, Yeah.
You just have such an open flow and such an embrace of the world, good and bad. Like, it's just so great. And I imagine that makes you just the best improviser. Like, your flow of like, yeah, here's a terrible thing that happened. Let's just talk about it for a second. Cool. Let's move forward. That's like solid improv right there. In my opinion, that's the like ideal way to do improv. So I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I wish that. And also like, good on you for taking control of your own journey and making this decision for yourself. You know,
that's hard sometimes. You've asked me about hard things. Sometimes that's hard.
Yeah, to take something and really give for your own journey. I feel like I'm the exact opposite in that every move in my life I've made for myself. Like, I realized that I was selfish in my 20s and 30s by moving from, project to project and sometimes just leaving the people in my wake. Like, sometimes people that I was friends with for a while, I just really didn't talk to again because, like, I moved on to the next thing. And I'm like, oh man, I really, you know, phones worked. So I really could have kept in touch with them better before I moved to the next thing. But, you know, I think you have a healthy dose of it, of like taking care of other people and taking care of yourself. And I hope that the move to LA really, you know, helps you to fulfill more of your dreams and help people. I don't know about how the improv scene in LA is going right now. I know there have been ups and downs in every major city, as far as like how many theaters are still open and whatnot, but I bet you the community that's in LA will be so happy to meet you, and I'm very excited to have you as part of the team.
Thank you.
So thank you, Michelle, so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate you sharing your story and your time with me during the day today.
Thanks for having me. This was a blast.
Good, good. Great.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.